How now shall we live? It's a new year, 2015, and I hope that after last week you have considered getting rid of the trash in your lives, throwing it out just like you put away your recycling container and your green bin and your garbage can, and purging yourself of some of the things you don't need this year, cleaning up. I hope you've taken advantage of that. And a good question that comes about is a number of people's lives through history is, well, how now shall we live? How then should we live? Once we understand God's great love for us, how do we then live? You know, it was an older pastor, and he had overstayed his welcome at the church. He had been there so long that his hearing was going. And his understanding of things was starting to go as well, and the congregation realized this before he did. And so the end of the year and the first deacon's meeting of the year, they sought to tell him the news. The oldest serving deacon said, started the meeting off, and he said, "Pastor, it's time." The pastor got a good big smile on his face, and he said, "I've been waiting for years for you to commit to this church." The youngest deacon then said, "No, Pastor, it's time to go." With another smile on his face, the pastor looked at him and said, "That's wonderful. We're crossing from the desert over the River Jordan into the promised land. I'm glad you're with us. Let's go." The oldest serving deaconess then said, "But Pastor, we're on different paths." He turned to her and he, with a kind of wrinkle over his forehead, he said, "Why don't you come over to the narrow path that leads to life with me?" The youngest deaconess turned to him and with boldness said, "Pastor, you're fired." To which the pastor looked at her with a big smile on his face and he said, "Thank you. No greater affirmation is given to me. The Holy Spirit comes upon me. I feel his presence with me and I do get fired up." Finally, the head of the deacon's board stood up and said, "Pastor, this is not God's design." To which the pastor fumbled with a bunch of papers and he said, "I was thinking about it before Christmas and I too realized that it's time for me to resign." You may find that funny or not based on your laughter, and it's nothing to do with what we're going to do in the next month in terms of my role. It was just a story. I won't be at the deacon's meeting, so I'm not anticipating any of these questions. But aren't we laughable, us human beings? And I hope at some point in your life, in your philosophical, intellectual, psychological, emotional search, that you've been able to laugh at yourself. Because it means you've got to a place of humility whereby you realize you're not everything that you wanted to be or thought you'd be, but you can still laugh at yourself. Because you realize God still loves you. And as one of my seminary professors used to say, "God puts up with me a lot, but he still thinks I'm cute." God still thinks you're cute. That's one of the reasons why you can laugh. We are made in the image of God, but we still get things incredibly wrong. We're made in God's image, and yet we get sick. We're made in God's image, and yet we find ourselves at a place in relationships whereby we're embarrassed because we realize that we're offside and we realize that we're not the people we want to be. Let's take the calendar, for example. Why did you celebrate a new year? Do you know that there really is no historical reason why January 1st would be the start of your year? There is no real reason for it. In fact, if you follow the Julian calendar, the Orthodox calendar, you're waiting for your new year because that's January 14th in which you celebrate a new year. If you wait for the Chinese New Year, you're going to celebrate on February the 19th, year 4712. And if you wait further and you have Hebrew roots, on September 25th, you'll celebrate year 5775. Not 2015. Coptics celebrate year 1732. The Assyrians celebrate 6765. And the Byzantines have gotten the most numbers. They celebrate this year 7524. Now, as Craig was saying earlier, 2015 sounds like enough of a space-age number. How about 7524? This is year 7524 in the Byzantine calendar. For our reference, 2015, we can thank Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar and Dionysius Exiguus and Pope Gregory for our calendar and for our months and for our year. The calendar is actually quite a humorous thing to look at if you can consider our humanity as the punchline. Because when you look at the months of the year, four of them are actually named after religious holidays. January, April, May, and June were all in the Roman calendar religious holiday months. And they were celebrated after, get this, Janus, the god of gates and doorways. January is the celebration of the god of gates and doorways. If you didn't know that, Aphrodite, the goddess of love. Maia was the spring goddess. And Juno was the goddess of marriage and the well-being of women. Those 4 months, yes, that's great. Good for Juno. Two of the months of the year are actually named after events. So in February, that's cleaning out the house month. It was purification month in the Roman calendar. And the month of March was the, after you clean up your house, was the year to resume war. It is laughable. It's the year, it's the month to resume war. Put it on your calendar, March. There's two months that are what I would call vanity months. They're vanity months because the month of July was actually named after Julius Caesar, who reformed the calendar and thought, hey, what the heck, I'll name a month after myself. And Augustus, or August, was named after Augustus Caesar, who himself modified Julius Caesar's calendar after the Senate killed him. And there's 4 months, get this, that are yet to be named. You could actually name your own month, because September actually means seventh month. October means eighth month. November, you got it, ninth month. And December, 10th month, because it used to have 10 months in the year. Think about it. The calendar we celebrate has 4 months that are named inappropriately because they're not even the right number for the months that we're in. New Year's used to start in May when you went off to war after cleaning your house. It's actually quite humorous to look at our months. If you want to go further with this sense of how much we can laugh at ourselves, try writing up your definitive 10 New Year's resolutions and mail them to me so that I can bring them out in December and say to you, how many pounds did you lose? Or say to you, did you buy that red sports car? Or say to you, make the most money I've ever made. We are laughable in our humanity. And it's challenging because when we think of crossing over, I think of rebirth in terms of, from a farmer's understanding, December is a good month to start a new year because the growing season starts again in just a few months. Planting and growing and harvest and regeneration is a cycle. In fact, God has such a perfect cycle on this planet that we've tried so hard to measure it in calendars, and we still get it wrong. We are made in God's image. But whether you're worried or perplexed, or concerned, or enthralled, or excited about 2013, there's one thing I can promise you. There's one thing I can guarantee you for 2015. There is hope for us all. Regardless of afterwards, whether you want to talk to me about a various sector of our economy, our society, your life, your health, there is hope for you. There is hope. There's hope in many different ways, but today I want to look at Psalm 24. As our basis for hope. Now, before I do that, I did realize last year in talking with the deacons that we want to be as transparent as we can in terms of you understanding what we're pursuing as a church. We live in times that are very confusing, times in which many philosophies every week impact you. So we want to be clear. We typically read from the New International Version. And I'm going to try better this year that if I'm reading from a different version of the Bible, that you also know what that is. That you understand what versions are. Why do we have different versions is a good question for people new to the faith. We read from the New International Version, the version that we think is the most approximated in terms of our language. Try reading the King James Version, and every few words, at least for me, I have to almost look up because I don't really know what "thee" means. Not used to it. So, we want to be clear about that, but I also want to challenge you this way. Set for yourself a challenge to read a portion of the Bible this year. Make a commitment today that you'll read one book from start to finish. Make a decision today that you'll read a certain genre of the Bible. Do you know the Bible has at least 10 different genres? So if you're a historian, you can read all the history in the Bible. If you're a poet, you can read all the poetry in the Bible. If you want to read wisdom literature, read the Ecclesiastes and the Proverbs. That's wisdom literature. There's Gospels and the prophetic section and letters. There's all different types of genres in the Bible. If you want to read a certain genre, I'm happy to help you out and say these are the books that are historical books. If you want to challenge yourself and read the whole Bible this year, you can do it chronologically by canon. In other words, start with Genesis and read to Revelation. A couple years ago, I read from Revelation to Genesis. That's interesting. Not backwards by word, which would be kind of confusing, but backwards by book, Revelation and then Jude, going backwards that way. If you want to read parallel, this is, I found, the most fascinating way for me, anyways, to read the Bible, is pick two or three or four or more books that you'll read together. So read Genesis and Psalms. Do Genesis 1, Psalm 1. Genesis 2, Psalm 2. And it's fascinating to me because God and I had a little challenge once. And I said, God, I think there's things in the Bible that really don't help me grow in my faith. And there was silence. Like when I was praying, God was just like, what? There is no part of my word that I won't bless you through. And I said, the genealogies? God challenged me to read through the genealogies, and he taught me something through them. First of all, I realized, where's my genealogy? These people that wrote genealogies had an incredibly accurate understanding of who they were. But if you want to read something in parallel fashion, the other challenge I had, I guess, was that I actually thought that if I was going to read parallel, it would just be mumbo jumbo. But in fact, God has strains of thought that he teaches you through various books. Anyways, you can come and talk to me about that. You can download off the computer a study guide in terms of reading the Bible through. You can do it over 2 years or 18 months. You can read just the Gospels. But I challenge you to read and fill yourself up with God's Word as a habit. 21 days. Do it for 21 days. They say it establishes the habit. So today we're going to look at Psalm 24. This is in the poetry, wisdom section of the Bible. And I'm going to have it here just behind me as well. So I'd like us to read this together. Psalm 24. Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. They will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from God their Savior. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, God of Jacob. Lift up your heads, ye gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord, strong and mighty. The Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, you gates. Lift them up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is he, this King of glory? The Lord Almighty. He is the King of glory. There's five reasons for hope that are laid out in this Psalm 24. This is, as surprised me once again, it shouldn't surprise me, I guess, but surprised me once again how brilliant this was in David's time. This is 1,000 years before Christ. And he gives us a key, gives us the secret to God's redemption right in the middle of it. But let me share with you five reasons for hope. First reason for hope in the first two verses, the earth is the Lord's, everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. We live in God's world that he sustains. How can you test that? Well, are you alive today? Who has sustained you? You cannot say it's only by your own hands. God sustains you. It's his world. He creates, he sustains his creation. He will provide. We know this because when we look at the calendar and we try to estimate days, God has it so accurate that it just keeps repeating all the time. We're the ones that try to make it accurate. He just keeps doing what's perfectly timed in his own creation. He sustains it. Think about the new year. Oh, what will we do this year? How will we look after ourselves? God says, hey, I made you. I'll look after you. Second reason for hope. Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? Second reason for hope is you can communicate with God. I often think that I'm just a dolt at this because prayer is communicating with God and he allows us, he listens to us. That's incredible. David asked the question, who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? Why does he ask that question? He asked that question because there is an answer. He asked that question because there is an ability for humans to ascend the mountain of the Lord. Think of Moses. Moses ascended the mountain and talked with God. So what is David reminding all the Israelites of? Hey, there was a guy, there was one of us. His name was Moses. Remember, he went up the mountain and he talked with God. And he asked the question, who may stand in his holy place? This is the temple. Who may stand in the holy place of God? Who may stand and talk? This is the high priest. Who can stand in his holy place? He asked the question because there is one. He can't ask the question if there's not any capacity for us to do that. There's all kinds of philosophies around the world that if you listen to, they say you can't talk to God. David here says you can. And then he answers the question. We can communicate with God. At least someone can, is what David says. Remember, King David. Priests would communicate with God. He answers the question. The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. The third reason for you to have hope is there is someone who could communicate with God, besides Moses, as David understands this, a person who has purity of motive, a person who has pure action, pure worship. And guess what? That's not me. That's not you. Think about it. Purity of motive and action, worship? I've worshiped other things. I put other things in that place where I think they're going to satisfy me long term. They're going to bring about all my satisfaction, all my fulfillment. And I've learned that worshiping things that don't satisfy, they come to their end, and I'm still going, hey, wait a minute, I thought you were going to look after me. False worship. It's not me. It's not you. We have idols that we expect things of, people that we are looking for the fulfillment of desire, lasting sustenance, lasting meaning. We're, as human beings, we're tempted to worship. We are set to worship. It's just we get distracted and we worship the wrong things. That's idolatry. David anticipates a great mystery, and that is there is one who can communicate perfectly with God, who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. And this is where the incredible statement happens. Because he talks about one person that does this. He's referring to Moses and the high priest, who is covered by the blood of the Lamb to go in and talk to God. David here anticipates, who is his own child, son of David, he anticipates Messiah. This is Jesus. Who is the person who has clean hands and a pure heart? Even Moses didn't have clean hands and a pure heart. No high priest ever had clean hands and a pure heart. This is Jesus. But this is where an incredible thing happens. When Jesus takes our place, because we cannot do for ourselves what God demands, and that's wholeness, that's perfection, That's holiness. Jesus does it for us, and look what the next word is. They. Halfway through this psalm, David changes the pronoun. He talks about the one. That's clear. And then he changes it. And he says, they will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from God their Savior. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, God of Jacob. David is in the midst because God has taught him representational holiness. And he's referring to Jesus. And that's the incredible statement for you, the incredible hope, is because the one, through God's glory, becomes they. They receive blessing. They receive vindication. What? Why vindication? We receive blessing. In fact, you're getting it today. God is downloading blessing upon you. Sometimes we can't appraise this. Bruce earlier talked about 10,000 reasons. He downloads blessings to you every day. If you're living, he's downloading blessings to you. But he then says they'll receive vindication from God. Why do we need vindication? Because bad things are going to happen this year. Unjust things are going to happen this year. Sad, tragic things are going to happen. And we're going to ask the question, why, God? Why? God gives us vindication. He will satisfy our need for justice long term. And he will save us. Such is the generation of those who seek him. David understands representational holiness because he says the generation that seeks him, who seeks the God of Jacob, will be blessed and vindicated. Fourth reason for hope is that we receive blessing, vindication. Our role in all of this is to seek him, because we cannot get to heaven, to God's presence, to holiness, to where we should be, to happiness, to fulfillment, without Jesus Christ. We can't do it on our own. Otherwise, David would have said, oh, all of you people that kind of have clean hands and sort of wash yourself up and sort of pure hearts and aren't worshiping false gods today. Doesn't say that. Ultimately, though, the fifth reason, the best reason, is that the King of Glory is coming back. The image here that David shares with us is that there are gates and doors to this world. It's represented in the city of Jerusalem, the golden gates. The golden gates were the gates in which you would go up to the temple and go up to the temple. And by going up to the temple that way, you're worshipers. Jesus went through these gates on a donkey as he went up to the temple. That's the image that we're given. But even David doesn't understand how this will happen twice. The first time happened when he was going to be crucified. The second time when he comes back to open the gates. Now, these are representational gates going into the temple, but these are the gates of all of creation, especially our world. Lift up your heads, ye gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of Glory may come in, may return to our earth to rule this place. Who is this King of the Glory? The Lord, strong and mighty. The Lord mighty in battle. What is he fighting? He's fighting the one that sought to destroy us from the very first. The devil. That's the prime battle that Jesus has, is against evil. Who is this King of Glory? The Lord strong and mighty, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, ye gates, he repeats it, that the King of Glory may come in. Jesus is coming back. Wouldn't it be awesome if it was in 2015? Wouldn't it change a whole lot of your dispositions and understandings and worries and concerns about 2015 if tomorrow is the day he's coming? Actually, I'd like him to come after my trip to Mexico. But just saying, maybe there's that one thing that's going to happen this year is that you say, Lord, if you're listening to me at all, please come after this happens, after my summer. Jesus himself doesn't even know the date in which he's returning, but he is returning. He knows even the dynamics of what he's returning to, Matthew 24. But truly us, we're pretty laughable. Laughing at ourselves is actually a good thing. Not laughing at others, but laughing at ourselves is a good thing. Because when we understand that we're made in the image of God and that he has a plan and that he sustains us and that he desires to accomplish things in us, then we can smile knowing that we rest in that beautiful hope. We hope because we live in God's world and he sustains it. We have hope because we can communicate with God through Christ. We have hope because God has sent someone who is pure in action and motive and in worship, who has already satisfied God's demands for us, wholeness. We have hope because we will receive blessing and ultimately vindication from him. And our role is to seek him. Ultimately, we have hope because one day he is going to return to earth and he's going to set his kingdom and his sovereignty over the whole earth. So regardless of which year you're celebrating this year, maybe it's in still 10 days for the Orthodox calendar, maybe 4712 or 5775, we can know that the God we worship holds our history and our future in his hands. And that I hope for you, my friends, brothers and sisters, that you can rest just like Emmett's resting, knowing that he has arms that are holding him. God is holding you in his arms, and he wants to bless you. Don't worry about events that are coming in 2015. Leave it to Jesus. Of the things that he taught us, he said, remember me through this act. Remember me through celebrating the fact that I came to satisfy God's demand. That I came to bless you even through the simplest of things in life, bread, wine. That as you eat and drink and live your life, the biggest blessing I have for you is that I'm transforming you from the inside out.